From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The Biggert Waters Flood Insurance Reform Act of 2012 went into effect at the beginning of the month. The law is intended to close the National Flood Insurance Program's $24 billion deficit by phasing in a series of rate increases. However, without action by Congress to delay the law, many Southwest Florida property owners will see huge increases in their flood insurance rates. We'll explore efforts to mitigate the law's adverse effects on property owners, the local economy, and the recovery of the housing market. Plus, drug-related deaths in Florida are on the decline, especially when it comes to prescription drugs. That's according to a report recently released by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and the State Attorney General's Office. We'll explore local drug use trends and what's behind the decline. First, this news. From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Drug-related deaths are on the decline in Florida, especially when it comes to prescription drugs. That's according to a new report released by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement from medical examiners' offices around the state. We'll take a closer look at the report's findings, local trends, and what's behind the decline later in today's show. But first, at the beginning of this month, the Biggert Waters Flood Insurance Reform Act of 2012 went into effect. In an effort to shore up the National Flood Insurance Program's multi-billion dollar deficit and create policies that reflect a property owner's true risk, the Act phases in rate increases for many property owners. And for owners of high-risk properties who purchased in about the last 15 months, the effect will be immediate rather than phased in, leading to huge increases in flood insurance premiums. When it comes to effects of the Biggert Waters Act, Lee County is the third most impacted county in the nation. Fort Myers Congressman Trey Radel is sponsoring the Flood Insurance Fairness Act, which would delay implementation of Biggert Waters until an affordability study is completed. And while the Florida Senate's Banking and Insurance Committee has met to address the issue, the state isn't waiting for next year's legislative session to take action. Officials with the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation are reaching out to insurance companies in the private market to gauge their interest in writing expedited flood insurance policies for Florida property owners. Joining me now for a closer look at the law and its impacts on property owners, the local economy, and the recovering housing market is insurance agent Chris Heidrick of Heidrick & Company Insurance and Risk Management Services based out of Sanibel. Chris is with us in studio and will join us in just a few minutes. Also with us is Wayne Daltrey, formerly of the Southwest Florida Regional Planning Council and more recently served as Lee County's Smart Growth Director. Welcome back, Wayne.
Thank you for having me.
Sanibel Mayor Kevin Ruane also joins us by phone. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me as well.
And also with us from Fort Myers Beach City Council and owner of Mango Street Inn on Fort Myers Beach is Dan Andre. He'll join us in a few moments as well. I invite our listeners to join the conversation. If you're paying for flood insurance, how will these flood insurance reforms impact you? Share your stories and ask your questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And I wanted to start with you, Wayne Daltrey. I wanted to ask about the history of the National Flood Insurance Program. This was created by Congress back in 1968. Now it's facing a $24 billion deficit. When did this program become so insolvent?
The program is the victim of its own success. It was originally geared to provide some subsidy, shall we say, for those who were getting affected by floodwaters, existing structures. In fact, the program was hand-in-hand with an effort to then, using land use controls, reduce development not related to shoreline use, so that future damage won't be as great. In other words, some people built low-lying areas and were getting repeatedly hit, and some of those uses were critical for the national economy, so that's why they wanted to protect them through insurance. But to make sure it just wasn't unwise development, you were not supposed to develop in a floodplain, where if you were, you were supposed to go up higher. So for the first time, there was insurance underwritten by the federal government, and so people started developing in the floodplain. Hmm. And between court reviews of engineering documents and through exemptions, more and more development occurred in the floodplain, perhaps not as high or as wisely as it should have been, so we started to increase the national exposure. Then with the changing climate conditions, some storms are becoming more vigorous than ever thought and becoming more frequent. And then floodplains, because it's just not a shoreline insurance program, it's a floodplain insurance program. Heavy rains in areas not known for heavy rains, the demand for inland insurance climbed, and so here we are, $24 billion later.
Right. Well, and why do you think in all that time the program was never privatized?
Because if you privatized it, well, let's face it, the insurance was private. And it wasn't being issued, or if it was being issued, it was exorbitant rates. And banks not liking to watch their investments wash away with their mortgages demanded that there be insurance. So it was a manner by which you kept development down on the shoreline and in floodplains. I mean, let's face it, you read the history books from 1890s or so, only fools lived on Bear Islands.
Right. And now it's where everybody wants to be. Right.
Yes, you have the mayor of one there, yes.
Right. Well, and as a former Lee County staffer yourself, what do you think this means for Lee County commissioners and really all property owners in the region? And without action from Congress, could the Flood Insurance Reform Act end up leading to an increase in the property tax millage rate?
I don't know if it's going to increase the millage rate because the county is, in effect, its own, although it has insurance, underwrites its own obligations, as the Hurricane Charlie showed us, that when you have reasonable reserves, you can cover your damages. And plus, the county for about two decades has been in a flood-proofing mode for many of its infrastructure investments, and the cities are aware that that's what they have to do, too. So public entities spend an extra dollar. Private entities, this is where the impact really binds, because you just don't argue with Mother Nature. You can go to court with her, but she's got the last word.
And the flood insurance rate maps were updated as part of this bill. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at those, but do you think, do they accurately reflect the level of risk, at least for Southwest Florida?
Every property owner who was in the program and who now is, because the map shows them covered, is going to object because it's more expensive to them. And every property owner, and there were some, who were used to be shown as being endangered and aren't, were probably rejoicing. The reality is, if this climate change mapping that's being done in university or broad-brushed, you're going to need these maps updated every 10 to 15 years. Well, if I'm a property owner, I'll worry about 15 years from now if I get my relief now. But it's the actuarial tables of the insurance companies that are going to determine the rates if you privatize it. And they're not going to go into the red.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this was, I had read a recent comment that you had left on a news press article really about this issue, indicating that what's happening now with the Flood Insurance Reform Act was kind of a forecast outcome some 40 years ago, you know, long before any of us had heard of the term climate change. Tell us about that.
Okay. There's always the prognosticator, you know, the Cassandras. And, of course, half of Cassandras are insane, so you don't pay much attention to them. But the ones who said, hey, now that you have an insurance program, human beings are human beings, and people are going to try and cut the cord. I mean, figure out the shortest way to a profit. And so, hey, waterfront property is highly desirable, a disquieting force on development along the shoreline was the fact that you had to have insurance, and, well, rich people didn't care, but poor people, I mean, we'll call it the upper middle class folks who could live on the shoreline weren't going to hedge their bets, because who needs the financial hit? But if you got insurance, you tell me I just have to go 11 feet up in the air because that's an average. Why, then that's what I'll do. Well, the program worked for two decades pretty much that way.
Right.
But more and more development and increased risk between the two of them. Those actuarial tables started to work against the program. So here we are. Then throw in good old Hurricane Sandy in the most intensely developed part of the United States. Just figure we'll be to Florida. When Andrew hit, the discussion was, boy, it's good it didn't land 20 miles further north. It's like for Lee County for Charlie. Boy, it's good it didn't land 20 miles further south. The insurance cost, I mean, the damage estimates, forget the lives, not that we ever should, but the damage estimates were 2 to 3 times higher. And the program that we're talking about now would have had that same discussion 10 years ago or 20 years ago. The damage values were so catastrophic. Back in the 1980s, the Regional Planning Council started doing estimates of damage. They were always off the charts beyond what the flood insurance program could cover if the storms landed in what we'll call critical pocket areas. Now we're getting storms in those critical pocket areas. Katrina was just one of them.
Join our panel this morning as we take a closer look at the impact to many Southwest Florida property owners of the Flood Insurance Reform Act, which went into effect this month. We're talking with former Lee County Smart Growth Planner Wayne Daltrey, insurance agent Chris Heidrich, Sanibel Mayor Kevin Ruane, and Fort Myers Beach City Councilman Dan Andre. If you own a home or business in a high-risk flood area, how is your insurance rate being impacted? Give us a call and share your story. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Chris Heidrich, what impact is this having on you and others working in your industry?
As far as my customers are concerned, there are several different segments. There are people who have had their flood insurance since before this act was passed. They're impacted in one way. It depends on.
So there's people being impacted now, and then there's people who are going to be impacted further down the road.
Exactly. So okay. There are two primary sections of the Bigger Waters Act. Section 205, which eliminates the pre-firm rates, the rates that Wayne was alluding to for those structures that were existing when the program got started. And Section 207, which eliminates grandfathering. Once a community starts participating in the National Flood Insurance Program, they adopt flood maps that are essentially designed by FEMA. Once a community has adopted those flood maps and begins participating, FEMA has stated that those people have been paying the actuarially correct rate, except for those who have been grandfathered. So removing grandfathering, which protects somebody who has built to the codes that FEMA specified, then after a map revision, they might be adversely affected, as Wayne alluded, the premiums may go up. In the past, they've been protected. That added some certainty around the real estate market and around construction. The removal of grandfathering in Section 207 creates uncertainty. So I'm seeing significant financial impacts for some. I'm seeing minor impacts for some. And I am seeing a lot of uncertainty for all.
I think that's a really good way to sum it up. There's a lot of uncertainty in there. Dan Andre, I want to bring you into the conversation now because we've talked about how some of these impacts, these rate increases can be huge, but we haven't really enumerated what that means. You own and operate the Mango Street Inn on Fort Myers Beach. First of all, tell us about the inn and tell us a little bit about your personal situation with flood insurance rates.
Sure. We're starting our sixth season. We rehabbed this property in 2008, and we're sitting at about $2,300 a year for our flood insurance, and we're looking at it to go to probably $25,000 a year.
Say that number one more time. Around $2,000 and then up to $25,000 is what you're anticipating?
That's correct, and we have two buildings, so we'll get assessed on both buildings, and we're not elevated. There's another innkeeper owner down here who just got a declaration page that they're going from about $2,300 to $51,000.
$51,000 a year.
That's correct.
So what do business owners like yourself do in that situation? I mean, would you be able to stay in business?
That's a good question. I mean, we're going to have to go obviously raise our rates. We don't have the money to raise our buildings. It's tough. I mean, we got to find an extra $2,000 a month.
Wow. So that I mean, this is going to have a potentially, if Congress doesn't act, a very significant impact on the local economy on Fort Myers Beach and on Sanibel too.
It's going to have a huge impact, and not just you know, with commercial, but also with the residential. You know, take somebody that when this act was passed in June of 2012, you take somebody that has bought since that time. They don't have the luxury of going up 20% a year until they reach their maximum. And, you know, if they're on a fixed income, now all of a sudden they have to find an extra $800 a month to take care of their flood insurance.
And Chris, you had mentioned to me when we spoke the other day that if folks who bought a property in a, you know, deemed at-risk area between July 6th of 2012 and October 1st of this year when the act went into effect, that they're not going to be able to phase in these rate increases over time. They're just going to see a large increase. Why is that?
It's the way the law was written. And what adds to that problem is – FEMA did not provide any guidance to insurance agents or real estate agents as to how this law would be implemented and what the actual effects would be until March 29th. That was the first technical guidance we received. It took the industry a little bit of time to actually interpret that and ask some questions and get some clarifications. And the actual rates that apply weren't released until August of this year. So there are a number of people who purchased structures, whether it was a commercial building or a home, between July 6th of 2012 and sometime in mid-2013, who had no idea what they were walking into.
And you didn't have the information to tell them. No insurance agent did.
No.
Join our discussion this morning on the impacts of the Brigart Waters Flood Insurance Reform Act, which went into effect at the beginning of the month. We want to hear your stories and questions. How are you being impacted by the flood insurance reforms? Call 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Or post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And Sanibel Mayor Kevin Ruane, tell us about the city's concerns regarding the Brigart Waters Act. I can't imagine there would be many, if any, properties in the community of Sanibel that would not be impacted by this.
Well, obviously, as you can imagine, there are many homes that were built early in the day and certainly before their maps were even in existence. So many are included and affected by this. But I think the bigger issue, as we all talk about this, is this will potentially impact one of four homeowners in Lee County. So it's way beyond Sanibel and Sanibel's island as it exists today. It's certainly beyond that. And you know, as Chris alluded to before, there's many different situations regarding this bill. And having been in the insurance and reinsurance industry the early part of my life, and now the chair of the Florida Municipal Insurance Trust, where we offer insurance for all municipalities in the state of Florida, there's just got to be different ways to go about this. And I think this was done in a vacuum. And I think there's many ways to look at this. And Florida, unfortunately, joining the national program, when you look and you separate Florida as a whole, you find it to be profitable from an insurance point of view. You find it to be one that is more than appealing. The time you have now is, can you maneuver quickly and come up with a solution as it's already in effect?
Right. And I know that you were recently part of the delegation that traveled to Washington, D.C. to speak to members of Congress about South Florida's water issues in regards to Lake Okeechobee discharges, a conversation for another day. But on that trip, were you able to address this issue at all?
We talked about water in both not only water quality issues, but the flood impacts and, you know, the pieces associated with it. We've written to all the people from the governor down, just trying to give them a snapshot of what Florida looks like. You know, when you look at the last 30-odd years, we've brought in $16 billion in premium for flood, and we've paid out $4 billion in losses. And certainly, Chris could appreciate that, having been in the business and still in the business. But as an insurance company and having worked for Crum & Foster, I'd take that risk any day of the week.
And I have a question for you and also for Dan Andre as Fort Myers Beach City Council member. Is there anything that municipal government bodies can do to, I guess, encourage Congress to take action on this? What have you done or what are you thinking that you might be able to do, if anything?
And, certainly in our trip to D.C., met with seven different people in the House, and obviously the House of Congress, and talked about this issue in each one. I mean, we have been extremely active, not only educating our local representatives, our state senators, the governor's office, and obviously Congress. So we have certainly worked very closely with Chris. He happens to be on our planning commission over in Sanibel as well. So he and I have had endless conversations about this and a pathway. We have the local realtors involved, Florida realtors involved. We have chambers involved. We have many different entities just trying to obviously bring this issue front and center. So I think not only the grassroots effort, but the elected officials, certainly myself and Commissioner Kaika when he was up at D.C., certainly Mayor Mandel from Fort Myers Beach, certainly made sure that our concerns were voiced up in D.C.
We're exploring impacts of federal flood insurance reforms that took effect this month on Southwest Florida property owners. We're talking with Sanibel Mayor Kevin Ruane, insurance agent Chris Heidrich, former Lee County Smart Growth Planner Wayne Daltrey, and owner of Mango Street Inn on Fort Myers Beach, Dan Andre. Join the conversation with your stories, comments, or questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK, or find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Let's take a call now from Roger in Fort Myers. Roger, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. What did you want to share with us?
Well, I was in the insurance business for quite a few years in the Fort Myers area. Hired, not an insurance agent now, later in the mortgage business, and experienced a lot of clients buying and shopping for flood and homeowners insurance. Recently had a case in Ocala, Florida, which I think is, just a guess, 75 miles or more from tidal water. FEMA remapped, took their, a single family, retired, fixed income family, took their flood insurance from the $600 range to the $3,500 range. And extreme issues with affordability. This is very similar to our property value appreciations we had back in 04, 06, and prior, and instituted the Save Our Homes program to help phase in increased taxing and put a cap on an annual basis to the assessment values. I think that especially in the single-family or residential areas of flood insurance, that something similar, homesteaded property or established homeowner property, needs some phasing because this becomes an extreme financial burden for especially fixed-income families, which we have a significant number in our community.
Right.
The coastal areas, I do feel, being on both sides of the coin in the business, selling the coverages, and as a consumer today, that the coastal areas do need to bear the costs, or rather to be subsidized. But there again, economics and business growth are stifled with the examples that were given of going to $25,000 or $50,000 a year, in no way to change the budget on a short term to absorb those costs. And it's going to put people out of business. So certainly some compassion or consideration needs to be considered when applying the law or the changes in rates. That's what I had to say.
All right, Roger, thanks so much for the call and for your comments. And you know what he was talking about in terms of the Save Our Homes program got me thinking about possible state interventions. What about this effort by the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation to get insurance companies to start writing flood insurance policies in the Sunshine State? Chris, do you think that's something insurance companies are really interested in doing?
The state is at least helping private insurance companies who want to explore this to explore it. The difficulty when you start a new insurance program and you don't have a history, there's not another program like it, there's no set of rates that you can copy, there's no actuarial experience you can look at. While FEMA has actuarial experience that you can look at, it's a different pricing methodology that you're going to use as a private insurance company, and there are risk models that AM Best is going to require that you use. It's going to require an incredible amount of capital. It's really the same issue as we have with wind, is that the amount of capital that's required for these catastrophic losses is more than many startup companies can ever raise.
Right, right. And maybe a little bit off here, but there are some 268,000 Florida homeowners who are among those that will be taking the biggest hit because their homes were built before 1974. Why are they bearing the brunt?
Again, it's two sections of this law.
Right.
So Section 205, those are the homes that are eliminating the pre-firm rates. So these are the subsidized rates. When people talk about subsidized rates apply to those homes that pre-existed, pre-existing. Subsidized rates have not encouraged growth along the coast because anyone who built after the flood maps went into effect, which sometimes it was 1984. In Lee County, it was 74. In Lee County, it's 1984. In Sanibel, it's 1979. So it depends community by community. But those subsidized rates were to encourage the initial participation. And at what point do you cut the cord and say, we're just going to let these buildings fall apart?
And I know that something else that had been advising clients is about getting some sort of elevation certificate. Tell us what that is, how you get one, and why it's important.
I'm glad you brought that up. If you own one of these older ground level homes, the only way to know where your premiums are going is to have an elevation certificate done. If an elevation certificate is a FEMA document. So looking at a survey is not going to do it for you. You actually need to have this document done. It's prepared by a licensed surveyor. Usually costs somewhere between $200 and $300 in this area to have one done. And that certificate will tell you what the elevation of your home is, what the base flood elevation is, what flood zone you're in, and those are the significant rating factors in flood insurance.
All right. And Congressman Trey Radels, as I mentioned before, has co-sponsored a bill that would delay implementation of Biggert Waters until the required affordability study is completed, and that was required by the law itself.
It was. There are many other bills in committee in the House and in the Senate, so this is not the first bill that was introduced. I have not heard anybody anywhere in any industry in any capacity argue that subsidized rates should stay. Every argument that I've heard is that we need a self-sustaining national flood insurance program. It's critical to our economy in all facets. The issue is the way this law was implemented, and we've gone through a number of examples already this morning where had an affordability study been done, had we determined whether or not the impacts these rates were going to have on individuals and on communities. Maybe there's a different way to go about it. When we talk about actuarially correct rates, there's a difference between actuarially correct rates and a self-sustaining program.
Okay.
And I think that when you think of the example that Councilman Andre gave of the innkeeper whose premium is going to $51,000, that rate probably equates to somewhere around $22 per $100 of coverage. I doubt that innkeeper would argue that is an actuarially correct rate.
Right. And I don't know if this is a question that anybody can really answer, but if the affordability study was a requirement of the law before it went into effect, how did it go into effect without them ever doing the study?
Well, that's actually the basis of the lawsuit that the state of Mississippi has filed against FEMA and the federal government, and that the state of Florida has filed an amicus brief as a friend of the court providing testimony. And I know that the state of Florida is actively looking for people who are impacted by this to sign an affidavit with their own special circumstances in support of that brief.
And in the meantime, Chris, I imagine that really this whole act is probably occupying a great deal of your life. You've probably spent a lot of time talking to clients. I know you've given talks about it before local government bodies, chambers of commerce, training other insurance agents about it.
When you're thrown into the pool, you learn how to swim. And that's essentially what happened. When I saw the first bulletin on March 29th, and it was that same day, those bulletins are emailed to me each day, and there's not that many of them. But on this one in particular, I spent the weekend reading it and realized that this looks like it's going to have a tremendous impact on my community, and felt like I needed to fully understand it. And then as I gained that understanding, I had an opportunity to share some of that knowledge, and I'm happy to do that. I'm glad that I have an opportunity to share what I've been able to pick up.
Sure. And, I understand, of course, Florida or Southwest Florida isn't uniquely impacted here. I mean, you have even landlocked states where, they might have issues with river flooding, But is Florida in particular going to be impacted by this if Congress doesn't delay or change the law?
Well, there's, again, two provisions. So Section 207, it's community by community. When you look at Fort Myers Beach, when you look at St. Pete Beach, you look at Treasure Island, these communities were all built before the flood maps were put in place. So they have a disproportionate number of these older ground-level structures who have been receiving the subsidized rates. And in many cases, there's no other structure to occupy. You think of Councilman Andre talking about the Mango Street Inn. There aren't that many other structures that are elevated that he could have looked at to open up his inn.
Right.
This was an existing structure. This wasn't something that he decided to build because there was some deal on flood insurance.
Right.
When we look at Section 207, that is going to impact more and more people. That's the second shoe to drop. Most of our comments that we've been making today, most of the articles that you read in the press are all about these pre-firm rates, Section 205. Section 207, as Wayne alluded to, is going to impact us the next time our flood maps are revised. So if you own an elevated home, if you own a home that was built after the flood maps, this law does not impact you directly today. It may impact you depending on what the next map revision looks like, and that's where – that's a public process, and that's where there's going to be an awful lot of screaming, and we're seeing a lot of that in Louisiana, New York, and New Jersey right now.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the show, but I want to thank my guests, former Lee County Smart Growth Director Wayne Daultrey, insurance agent Chris Heidrick of Heidrick & Company Insurance and Risk Management Services, Sanibel Mayor Kevin Ruane, and Fort Myers Beach City Councilman and owner of Mango Street Inn on Fort Myers Beach, Dan Andre. Thank you all for your time this morning.
Thank you.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, drug-related deaths were on the decline last year, according to a new report from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. We'll take a closer look at what's behind the trend. It's just ahead. Stay with us.